Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. Thanks for joining us. I hope you're having a great day. You know, here we are in our sixth season of this podcast. It seems like only yesterday when we started our mission. And our mission here at Open Your Eyes is to help us all open our eyes a bit more to the possibilities and realities all around us. And each week, we try to bring messages that will help you in real and practical ways to live a happier life. So today, wherever you are, as you listen to this podcast, I hope you get a new perspective of how you can think and live better. And if this podcast inspires you a bit, please share it with a friend. It just may be what they need in their life today. Let's get started, shall we? Today, I'd like to talk about the gentle slope. If you, like me, have been to the Grand Canyon, you've thought the same thing as me. When most people stand on the rim of the Grand Canyon, they are struck by its immense size. The canyon stretches approximately 277 miles across northern Arizona. At its widest points, it spans nearly 18 miles from rim to rim. And in some locations, it plunges more than 6,000 feet deep, well over a mile from the canyon rim to the Colorado River below. Looking across the canyon, the opposite side often appears less like the other side of a valley and more like a distant mountain range fading into the horizon. Well, on the morning of June 30th, 1956, the skies above the Grand Canyon were clear and beautiful. Air travel at the time was booming in America, and many flights allowed passengers to enjoy scenic views of landmarks along their routes. And that morning, a plane operated by TWA and another by United Airlines were both crossing northern Arizona. On board these aircraft were 128 passengers and crew members, many traveling for business, family visits, or summer vacations. The TWA aircraft had departed LA for Kansas City, and the United aircraft was headed to Chicago. In the era before modern radar coverage and computerized air traffic control, pilots often had more freedom to deviate from their routes to avoid weather or provide passengers with scenic views. As both aircraft flew near the Grand Canyon, they entered the same area of sky. At approximately 21,000 feet above the canyon in a clear sky, the two planes collided. The impact was catastrophic. Both aircraft broke apart and crashed into remote sections of the canyon. There were no survivors. Well, the accident stunned the nation. At the time, it was the deadliest commercial aviation disaster in history. How could two planes in open sky collide? I mean, what are the odds that two planes could hit head-on in open air? And what made the event particularly remarkable was the difficulty of reaching the crash sites. The wreckage had fallen into rugged, nearly inaccessible terrain. Rescue and recovery teams faced steep cliffs, extreme summer heat, and isolated canyon walls. Some rescuers had to descend into areas that few people had ever visited. For weeks, helicopters, personnel, climbers, and park staff worked under extraordinary and difficult conditions. Pieces of the wreckage were scattered across the remote canyon formations. Even today, small remains of the crash can still be found in certain parts of the canyon. Commercial air travel had grown significantly in the 1950s, and this collision shocked government leaders into recognizing that America's rapidly growing aviation system needed better safety and better infrastructure. That's how modern air traffic control and radar started. You know, life seems that way, doesn't it? That major events in our life are the things that get noticed. We often wait for the big things before making needed changes. But that's not how life does its real work. The most remarkable thing about the Grand Canyon is not its size, but the way it was created. Imagine standing on that same landscape 6 million years ago. There was no Grand Canyon. There were no breathtaking overlooks or towering cliffs, no chasm exposing layers of colorful rock. Instead, a river winds its way across the relatively high plateau. If you visited for a day, you'd see no change. If you returned a year later, it would be almost identical. Even over a human lifetime, the transformation would be difficult to notice at all. But nature was operating on a different timetable. The Colorado River simply kept flowing, day after day, year after year, century after century. During spring floods, the river carried sand and gravel and rocks downstream. Water worked its way into tiny cracks in the rock. During cold winters, freezing temperatures caused the water to expand and widened the cracks. Gravity loosened rocks from the canyon walls, and wind carried away sediment. No single storm created the Grand Canyon. No single flood carved a mile-deep gorge. And there was never one dramatic moment when the canyon suddenly appeared. Instead, countless small forces worked together over millions of years. The river removed a little rock. The weather loosened a little more. Gravity carried some away, and the process repeated itself again and again. And over 5 to 6 million years, the Colorado River exposed layer after layer of rock. What makes the Grand Canyon such a powerful lesson is that the forces that created it were not spectacular on any given day. A single drop of water seemed insignificant. A grain of sand, harmless. A tiny crack, hardly important. Yet over time, they made a huge difference. And it reminds us that extraordinary results are often the product of ordinary actions repeated consistently over time. The river never set out to carve a canyon a mile deep. It simply kept moving in the same direction. And given enough time, small forces became an extraordinary force. Most people imagine life-changing moments as dramatic events. We picture a lightning strike of inspiration, or a breakthrough, or a heroic decision. But most life doesn't work that way. Great success rarely arrives in a single day, and neither does failure. In my experience, the great things we achieve, or the erosion in our actions and character, are not arrived at in a moment, but rather it is a gentle slope, upward or downward. The marriage doesn't become strong because of one anniversary. A business isn't built by one customer. A reputation isn't earned through one act. And meaningful life is rarely the result of one grand decision. Instead, our lives are shaped by small choices. A kind word, an extra page read before bed, a daily walk, a note of gratitude, a decision to save $10, a habit of listening, a habit of learning, a habit of showing up. Like a river carving a canyon, the effects are almost invisible day by day, yet over years, they become impossible to ignore. In the early 20th century, a librarian named Jenny Mass Flexner worked quietly in Louisville, Kentucky. Few people know her name today. She wasn't a politician, a celebrity, or someone who built a great fortune. She simply believed that books could change lives. Each day she walked through neighborhoods, delivering books to people who couldn't come to the library. She visited immigrants and factory workers and children, the elderly and the sick. One book at a time, one conversation at a time, one recommendation at a time. Over decades, thousands of people gained access to literature because she kept doing small things. Most days felt ordinary to her, probably. Most felt repetitive, probably. But over a lifetime, generations benefited from the literacy she helped cultivate. So today, in your daily walk, what small choices do you consider? Should you make that one more contact? Call that person whose name comes to your mind. Make that extra effort. Say that prayer or give of your time. The gentle slope reminds us that impact compounds. Imagine planting a tree. The first year, it looks disappointing. The second year, it doesn't look much better. Yet underground, roots are spreading. And many worthwhile pursuits work the same way. The roots arrive before the fruit. In the 18th century, many American Quakers were affluent conservative slaveholders. And John Woolman, a young man, strongly believed it was his calling to rid his beloved society of this terrible practice. His method was unique. He didn't raise a big storm about it or start a protest movement. His method was one of gentle but clear, persistent persuasion. He accomplished his mission by traveling up and down the East Coast by foot or horseback, visiting slaveholders. The approach wasn't to censure these slaveholders, but to raise questions. What does the owning of slaves do to you as a moral person? What kind of an institution are you binding over to your children? Man by man, inch by inch, by persistently returning and revisiting and pressing his gentle argument, over a period of 30 years, the scourge of slavery was eliminated from this society, the first religious group in America to formally denounce and forbid slavery amongst its members. A seemingly impossible task. One conversation at a time, small efforts compound. In your business, you may be tired, thinking that the numerous text messages, phone calls, and visits you're making to foster relationships feels at times like a waste of time. But the truth is, the compound effect of your efforts will indeed bring results. The miracles you are seeking in your life and business are found in the small and simple things you do consistently. As the scripture says, by small and simple things are great things brought to pass. In the 1930s, an Englishman named Frank Morley developed a simple habit. He wrote letters, lots of letters, every day. Not because anyone told him to, not because he expected recognition. He simply believed relationships deserved attention. Over decades, he maintained friendships across continents. People later remarked that his correspondence had helped preserve families, friendships, and communities. One letter rarely changes a life, but thousands of thoughtful letters over 40 years, yep, they create a legacy, don't they? And I wonder if you and I decided to send a few text messages each day to those who need encouragement, to thank them for their contribution to your life or family or business, or just a simple message letting others know that you're thinking of them. What would be the accumulated impact of this over a lifetime? It would be quite remarkable, all from something that takes only a few minutes a day. Benjamin Banneker is remembered occasionally in American history, but far less than he deserves. Born in 1731, he had little formal education. As a young man, he became fascinated with understanding how things worked. He borrowed books, studied at night, and taught himself mathematics and astronomy. His progress came slowly, a page today, a calculation tomorrow, a question answered next week. But over time, he learned and grew in his knowledge. Years later, he became one of the most accomplished self-taught scientists in early America. He helped survey land that would become Washington, D.C. He published almanacs and earned respect from leading thinkers of his day. None of this happened because of one brilliant afternoon. It's because his curiosity became a habit. The world celebrates talent. The world notices breakthroughs, but breakthroughs happen in the gradual slope. And other things in life also work on the gradual slope. Our thoughts and our thinking also accumulate. Edith was born in Czechoslovakia, and she loved ballet and gymnastics. She worked hard and was a member of the Hungarian Olympic gymnastics team in 1942. Then the Hungarian government enacted new anti-Jewish policies, and she was removed from the gymnastics team. In 1944, the Germans occupied Hungary, and she was forced to live in Casa Ghetto with her parents. In April, they were forced to stay in a brick factory with 12,000 other Jews for a month. In May of that year, they were deported to Auschwitz. She was separated from her mother, who was murdered in the gas chamber. According to her memoirs, Eger stayed in various camps, including Mauthausen. The Nazis evacuated Mauthausen and other concentration camps as the Americans and the Red Army approached. She was sent on a death march with her sisters and other women. They marched for about 55 kilometers. She couldn't walk further due to exhaustion, and one of the girls with whom she shared her bread earlier carried her. When the U.S. military liberated their camp in May of 1945, she was left for dead among the number of dead bodies. A U.S. soldier is said to have rescued her after seeing her hand move. The soldier quickly sought medical attention and saved her life. At the time, she weighed 70 pounds. Well, she recovered in American field hospitals and returned home to find her sister Clara. She married a man who she met in the hospital. They fled together with their daughter to the United States. There, She suffered from war trauma and survivor's guilt. She studied therapy and received her PhD in clinical psychology, and she would return to Auschwitz to face her repressed emotions. She would later write two books to help others free themselves from their thoughts and see their life, regardless of their circumstances, as a gift. And she would later appear on the Oprah Winfrey Show. She famously said, "You can come to terms with what was and what wasn't, and you can concentrate not on what was lost, but what is left. And that is the choice to live every moment as a gift, to embrace what is." She taught that the real prisons are not those like she served in during the war, but the prisons of our mind. And the key to unlocking our minds when we get stuck is to see life as a gift. She tells the story of working on her master's degree at the university, and she said, "My supervisor came to me and said, 'Edie, you've got to get a doctorate.' And I laughed. 'By the time I get a doctorate, I'll be 50, I said. He said back to me, 'You'll be 50 anyway.' Those are the smartest four words anyone ever said to me. 'Honey, you're going to be 50 anyway, or 30 or 60 or 90, so you might as well take the risk. Do something you've never done before to grow. You've got to evolve instead of revolve.'" For many of us, our thinking is revolving rather than evolving. We return to the things of the past, and we don't choose to direct our small daily thoughts to the future. And over time, the revolving thinking becomes a habit. And so can positive future-based thinking, by the way. Consider you at the end of your days as you reflect back on what you thought about and where you spent your efforts. Wouldn't it be amazing if your thoughts were focused on the positive and the future? What I've learned in life is that thoughts, like my life, is a gift and are very real and do create reality in our life. As one author put it, scientists have discovered that one thought creates what looks something like a tree in your brain. If the thought never comes back, it will dissolve in a few days. If you continue to think on this thought, it will grow more branches on this little tree. And as it becomes more developed, your thoughts affect your physical brain and your body's health. Positive thoughts, little by little, in the gradual slope, affect the health of your brain. We were never designed for our brains to handle negative thoughts for any length of time. Research shows that 75 to 98% of mental, physical, and behavioral illness comes from one's thought life. When we think good things over and over again, we create a neural pathway, which is a connection formed in your brain from one neuron to the other. And this allows a signal to be sent from one part of your nervous system to the other more quickly. Think about it like this. Imagine walking down a wheat field. The first time you step on the stalks of wheat and bend them down, you form a sort of a path. If you never travel that way again, the path will disappear. But if you travel that path again and again, soon the path will become more defined. If you travel it extensively, it will grow into a trail, then a dirt road, then a paved road, and then a superhighway. That's why small choices in how we think over time direct our life, our mood, and who we become as people. In our life and work, it often sometimes feels ordinary, our work does, while we're doing it. This is the real challenge, isn't it? To recognize that ordinary creates extraordinary. In rural India, a teacher named Babar Ali began helping younger children learn when he was still a student himself. He would return from school each day and gather younger children who lacked educational opportunities. At first, there were only a handful, and then a few more, and then dozens, and then hundreds. What began as a small after-school effort to help teach these younger kids eventually became recognized as an educational movement, serving children who otherwise couldn't have attended school. And he was later recognized by the BBC as the youngest headmaster in the world. The gentle slope turns small actions into great outcome. The other important part of the gentle slope is this. Many dreams die because people underestimate small beginnings. Meaningful work often starts embarrassingly small. In the 1960s, an ordinary milkman from New Zealand named Barry became one of the world's top marathon runners. He is best known for winning the bronze medal in the marathon at the 1960 Rome Olympics, a performance that placed him at the center of one of the most important eras in distant running history. Born in 1934, he moved to Auckland as a teenager, where he began training seriously and was eventually coached by Arthur Lydiard. Well, Lydiard trained his athletes differently than others at the time. You see, at the time, most marathoners trained like sprinters. High-intensity training was sprints and timed shorter runs, but Lydiard's approach was different. His core idea was that aerobic endurance had to be built first before speed could matter. His athletes, including Barry, would run extremely high weekly mileage by the standards of the time, often in the range of 100 miles per week, much of it at steady aerobic pace rather than racing speed. Athletes would spend months building aerobic base through long, steady runs, a gradual slope of building endurance. Well, at the 1960 Olympic Games in Rome, Barry competed in the marathon. The gold medal was won by a runner from Ethiopia, who famously ran the entire course barefoot, and another by an athlete from Morocco, and Barry took the bronze. Following this accomplishment, the running world would change and follow Lydiard's training methods. Likewise, what if we adopted the gradual slope philosophy in our life and business? Daily, small choices of actions that made a difference. This could spread to your team and to your family. The gentle slope wins. And you know, there's something comforting about the gentle slope. It means you don't need to change your life today. You only need to change today's direction. You don't need to read 100 books, read 10 pages. You don't need to become an expert, learn one thing. You don't need to transform a relationship, send one message. Most mountains are climbed one step at a time. Most gardens grow one day at a time. And most meaningful lives are built one choice at a time. Now, one of my favorite books is The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And it illustrates how small, consistent choices, good or bad, accumulate over time into massive life outcomes. And the central idea is that success is the result of hundreds or thousands of tiny decisions that compound, much like interest in a bank. A choice as small as drinking a soda every day, or skipping a short workout, or spending 20 minutes scrolling instead of learning, has the ability over months and years to completely change the trajectory of your life. Hardy describes how small daily habits, such as consistently choosing unhealthy food, or avoiding exercise, or staying in low-quality environments, they don't show immediate consequences. At first, nothing seems to change, but over time, those small decisions compound into noticeable outcomes like weight gain or lower energy or missed opportunity. The point is that the cost of a single bad decision is almost invisible, which is why people repeat them, not realizing they are building long-term habits. And he contrasts this with positive compounding. Small improvements like reading 10 pages or saving money or practicing a skill each day. These actions feel too small to matter, but over time, they create advantages. He describes a commercial airplane taking off from LA and headed for New York. If the pilot is off course by just 1 degree, it seems completely insignificant at the start of the flight. For the first few minutes, the plane appears to be heading in the right direction. Nothing feels wrong. But if the flight continues over thousands of miles, that one tiny degree deviation compounds. Instead of arriving in New York, the plane could end up hundreds of miles away, like in Washington, D.C. The key idea is that the mistake wasn't dramatic or obvious. It was almost invisible at the beginning. He uses this in his book to reinforce one of his book's central messages, that small daily decisions work the same way. When we make small decisions, slightly better or slightly worse, they send us in a particular direction. Because today's small choices become tomorrow's habits, and tomorrow's habits become next year's character, and character becomes destiny. The gentle slope is always working in your life, and the question is, in what direction? So, today, make a few small choices to move you and your business and your family, or even your life, in the right direction. The way you think, act, and what you choose in the small times and small ways each day will matter. And watch, you will begin to change in ways that you may not have thought could happen. Most of all, thanks for being here today. Don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.